And there you have it. The 20-minute version of Forces of the Night. That is actually four tracks spliced together again to recreate what was on the LP. And I got to tell you, I just freaking love it. You Make Me Believe in Love Again, Forces of the Night, just magic stuff, magic disco stuff. And we'll have DC LaRue back Wednesday evening to introduce the other tracks and to tell us more of his stories. We lost DC earlier because his cell phone was discharging at a rate that we weren't comfortable with that it would make it through the whole show. As I said, I'm closing it all around 11:12, 11:11, something like that, to compensate and make all the timing work out of the network. One story I want to get in before the evening closes, and you got to love this. Anybody who's ever been to a church knows that there's something called a church directory. Now, church directories typically have a photograph of Papa Smith and Mama Smith and maybe Baby Smith all sitting together, and their professional photographer does the picture, and they're all combined into a little booklet or a small book, depending upon the size of the church, and it has their phone number and the contact and their mailing address so that, you know, if you need to call one of the church members, you can just look in the church directory and give them a call or find out when their birthday is, this sort of thing. Church directories are nothing new. But in Fort Worth, Texas, Broadway Baptist Church, their 125th birthday celebration church directory has become a huge meltdown. The directory, as many others, feature a yearbook-style photograph. They're normally in color of the family members, as I explained. But you see, the problem is there are three gay couples who go to that church, and they are accepted at the church. It's okay if they go. But, boy, they don't want their pictures in the church directory. They are having a huge battle over that. You see, what they're saying now at this point is, well, we'll let you be photographed separately, and, you know, your photographs can even appear next to each other, but we certainly cannot have you homosexuals posing in the same picture. And it says, you know, we're dealing with a difficult issue. We have different opinions, and we're trying to be respectful, and one Baptist is saying it's just Baptist being Baptist. But I've got to tell you, I'm in the church directory here at Miccosukee Methodist, United Methodist Church here, and I'm there with my doggy. Hell yes, I took my doggy down, and she's sitting next to me on the little platform where you sit and take your pictures, and I've got my arm around her, and she's smiling at the camera, and I'm smiling at the camera. And I mean, it just amazes me. I can have my church, my photograph put in with my doggy, yet these gay couples cannot have their pictures in the same photographic frame here at Broadway Baptist Church. They're having a huge meltdown. Betty Price, who's been a member for 44 years, says, "This is an unfortunate situation." Well, Betty, I would agree with you. And I think it is just the height of hypocrisy to have these people attend church and pay their tithes and probably go to the homecomings and bring covered dishes every time you turn around. Good enough to eat their food, mind you, from a homosexual kitchen. Good enough to say hello to. Good enough to, thank you, ELO. She posted my picture. Oh, I'll scan the picture of me and Doggy in the church directory, and I'll send it up to ELO so you guys can see it in the chat room. By the way, if you haven't joined the chat room, you really ought to. There's great stuff going on. I have 2 minutes left, and so I'm going to do a couple of very short things here. One, this I can get out pretty quickly. State Representative Allen got 6 months in jail. He avoided jail, and he got 6 months probation, which is basically you go and you say, no, I haven't tap danced in a men's room, and no, I haven't violated any laws, and then you go. And you do that once a month for 6 months, and he's home free. And this is all because he offered the cop $20. If he had offered him $2,000, the cop would have probably accepted it, and this would have all gone under the bridge. And one other quick story is, where is Mark Foley? He's the one that sent the the emails to the pages there in D.C. Well, he's in Beverly Hills. You see, he, among other things, being a member of the Missing and Exploited Children, he also served as the Congressional Entertainment Industries Caucus. So he has lots of contacts in Hollywood. So the poor boy's out in Hollywood now trying to get himself a job. He and his lover, he's acknowledged he's gay now. I guess the therapy and the alcohol rehabilitation didn't work. But anyway, he and his longtime partner, who's a dermatologist, a very wealthy fellow, his name is Miss Lane. By the way, if you want to Google the dermatologist site, it's Lane, L-A-Y-N-E, Nisbaum, N-I-S-E-N-B-A-U-M. That's Lane, L-A-Y-N-E, N-I-S-E-N-B-A-U-M. He's a cosmetic surgeon, makes plenty of money. And he and Mark Foley are on the scene in Palm Beach, and they have a standard feature on the Palm Beach circuit. And there are even portraits of them that have been Andy Warholized that are being auctioned off there at an upcoming art fair in West Palm Beach. So he's out of the closet now, and that's fine. And looks like his lover is over 18, so there shouldn't be a problem there. So welcome back to whatever the hell it was you were doing. And I think that probably wraps it up for this evening. I've enjoyed having you here, and I hope you enjoyed my guest. He's remarkable. We'll pick him up again Wednesday. Thank you for the referral, Glenn Rivera. So in closing, I have Cynthia Manley waiting to say, Dan.
Oh, well. I thought there was a horn section in here somewhere. John Fox, isn't there a horn section in here somewhere?
I think it comes up later.
Okay, well, this is long, so we'll just fade out. Peter Godbold, are you there?
Yes, sir. I am here, and I have absolutely no idea how to do show with John Fox, because he's from Australia, and he's upside down, and I don't know what to say to him.
Well, we got 45 minutes to figure it out in, guys.
Peter, first hint is all you got to do is say g'day. And I figured since we had nothing kind of lined up, I haven't talked about the pending Australian election at all in my show recently, and it's only like 4 days away, and I thought I'd let you guys know kind of what's going on here, because it's going to play out really, really kind of funny, I think, if things are going as they look. It looks very much like the swing is on, and little Johnny Howard, Bushy's butt-licking buddy, is going to be thrown out, not only his government, but there is a really high chance that he himself could lose his own seat.
Oh, that would be charming.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, yeah. It would be absolutely charming. But what's really been kind of funny about this, you know how the Republicans and the Liberals here are so similar, and they run, once the campaigns really get, you know, down to the nitty-gritty, they run extremely disciplined campaigns, you know, as a matter of course. They never veer from the message. They've got their talking points down, and they don't screw around. They don't usually fall off message. But for some reason, this time around, Labor has had the most disciplined campaign I have seen from the Labor Party since I lived in this country, and the Liberals have been all over the shop. And it seems as though there's talk that the Liberal Party could be in severe disarray after this election. Whether they get back in by, somebody's whisker or not, I think even internally in the Labor Party, there are people getting ready to rebel. They don't like this authoritarian kind of, you know, my way or the highway thing that Johnny Howard has run. And all this past week, there have been ministers and other high-level Liberal officials coming out saying that Howard should have signed the Kyoto Protocol. They never agreed with the anti-terror laws, all of this kind of stuff. And Howard's getting more and more defensive when he's on television. People ask him questions. You know, do you see a split in the party over you know, the environment? And he just gets really, really pissed, and he's like, no, I don't. And next question, ask me a real question. And you can see an old, tired, grumpy little bastard with his back up against the wall. And it's been one of the most hysterical things to watch. And the press have gone tooth and nail against the government, because it came out just a couple of weeks ago. All of the media in Australia got together and exposed how the Howard government has stonewalled on freedom of information requests. And so the press is completely not happy with this government, because even though we complain about the mainstream media, they haven't been able to even try and do their jobs, because they're not allowed to get any other information than what is spoon-fed from the spin machine. And it's just been absolutely fantastic to watch. And I kind of hope that we're going to see something similar happen as we get into the real game in the U.S. election next year.
Well, this is all very interesting. At least they're asking some difficult questions. That's a hell of a lot better than diamonds or pearls.
Well, a lot of this Bushivism rolled downhill to you guys. And maybe this is you guys rolling it back at us.
Well, yeah, there's been all this talk about, you know, the Howard, you know, economic discipline has, you know, shown this country, you know, the greatest prosperity in its history, which, you know, in part is true. It's on the back of a resources boom like no other in history. However, I think the Australian people are seeing that in the process of all this affluence, they have lost their good-natured soul. You know, the concept that Australia is the place of a fair go, And I think Australians across this country, and I mean, I can't vote here yet, you know, so I mean, I don't really have a pony in this race. However, you know, the environment, all these things, you know, they become a major issue down here. And I think Australia is suddenly realizing after the Dr. Hanif affair, where, you know, this poor doctor was strung up over a bogus terrorism charge with, you know, a SIM card of his that he gave to a brother, and the brother ended up being part of that, you know, foiled, you know, half-assed bombing attempt in the UK earlier this year.
Yeah, the one at the airport in Glasgow.
Yeah, and I mean, this guy, you know, this guy had no connection, but yet he was strung up, and things were set in place that even if he was bailed or the case fell apart against him, they were going to go and detain him via immigration law, saying that he didn't pass the character test, which is, you know, just kind of, you know, someone just has to make the decision, I don't want you here anymore. And this is all blowing up in their face. Bob, you and I the other day when we were talking in one of our text sections, I mentioned about this guy, Mr. Hakim, who, when his case was thrown out, this guy had been falsely imprisoned, his family threatened if he didn't, you know, cooperate. And the QC that threw it out said, this is a joke. This is an absolute joke. And we found out that the Australian Federal Police were told by the Attorney General to try and create as many anti-terror prosecutions as they could because they wanted to test the law. They were basically given a quota.
Yeah, and people pay the price, of course. See, that's so much different. You had a member of the judiciary there, John, who was willing to throw out a completely bogus charge. Earlier tonight in my show, I had the brief mention of the AP photographer that the military is going to have tried by an Iraqi court, but they won't tell him what he's being charged with, and they won't tell him what the evidence is against him, and they've held him for 19 months. He's been in prison since April 2006.
You know, the idea of due process has been thrown right out the window in both our countries. And, you know, we're seeing, at least here, a return to people saying, you know, okay, yeah, I was able to afford a bigger house, and I got my plasma TV on no money down and all this kind of thing. But, you know, I don't like this image of Australia that has been created over the last 11 years. We've become a mean country as opposed to being, you know, everybody's down under buddy, come and have a beer. And it's very much changed the face of Australia in the world. And
yeah, you've
Kevin
become
Rudd,
you've become as mean as you've become as mean as America with a cuter accent. You know, go, Peter.
Well, I agree. Now the accent is killer, and it's hard to imagine the mean with the accent. But by God, John, you're right. The stories that I'm hearing that you present from Australia remind me so much of what's going on in this country, and the stories that you told about the Aborigines a while back were just horrifying. This whole thing about trying to extinguish the whole race, as best I can tell.
And Johnny Howard, before he got into federal politics, talked very much that he supported a return to the white Australia policy, which was exactly that, trying to breed out the Aborigines from a land that, you know, I mean, they are so unbelievably connected to. Last night, there's a program here called Enough Rope. It's an interview program with a guy by the name of Andrew Denton, and he's a wonderful interviewer. He's one of these guys that disarms the largest of figures and gets them to really open up. And last night he had this adventurer guy on. I think his name is John Smith. Don't quote me on that. I'm probably wrong. But this is a guy that actually walked solo from one end of Australia to the other. He's climbed the Himalayas. He's been to both poles. And recently he took a walk from basically Wollongong, which is the next city south of Sydney, to the dead center of Australia solo with a camera and a tripod and shot a documentary of it. And he was talking about how twice when he's been out in the bush, he's been, you know, at night, asleep, and he suddenly hears the sounds of celebration, but he can't tell where they're coming from. And basically, he is convinced that he's hearing an Aboriginal corroboree going on. And, you know, he wrote it off to, you know, his mind playing tricks on him, you know, the isolation of 300 days in the bush. But when he got to his destination in the center of Australia, he hooks up with a rancher friend of his who's going to drive him back to Wollongong. And his rancher buddy had an Aboriginal bloke who runs cattle, and he spends a lot of time in isolation out in the middle of the bush. And he turned around without ever hearing about his experiences with hearing these sounds. Asked, he says, "Have you ever heard the corroborees?" And he looked at him and he said, "I have, twice." And he said, "Ah, I've heard them many times." And he said, "And I've gone hunting for them, and there's nobody there." And there is this spiritual connection that the Aborigines have with this great brown land that is awe-inspiring at times. And when you read the history of what white settlement has done to these people, it's heartbreaking, and there's so much of this history that's been lost. Thousands of languages have been lost because the languages, you know, vary from tribe to tribe. And, you know, and this kind of explorer guy, he's a white guy, you know, and he's just said, you know, it's like the most amazing experience he's ever had. And he never really mentioned it to anyone because they thought he would, you know, they thought he was a little bit nuts. But then he hears from this old Aboriginal rancher, you know, says, "Have you heard the corroborees?" And he's like, "Yes, I have." He goes, that's the spirit of the Aboriginal people still occupying their indigenous land. It was like chilling to watch this. It was fantastic.
Too cool. Way too cool.
Well, I was reading recently, there was an article about, and I wish I could recall the number off the top of my head, of languages being lost every day. And it was shocking because you would think that every language in the planet would be eliminated at that rate. But apparently there are far more languages than anyone has a clue, and it's a shame to lose it. Because when you lose a language, you've lost your heritage. It's gone. There's no way to relate it.
Well, you haven't just lost your heritage. You've lost a way to look at the world.
True.
Because, you know, one of the things that I find fascinating, John talking about the Aboriginals, I'm absolutely fascinated with their view of life in general, the idea that the concept of the dream time, and the fact that this is, you know, John, correct me if I'm wrong, this is all a dream, right? What happens in your sleep,
absolutely.
What happens when you're dreaming is what's real.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's just this kind of respect for the land, you know, very similar to the Native American culture. You know, there's this connection to the land, the earth, and one another. You know, no matter how much trouble the Aboriginals face in this country with alcoholism and drug addiction and whatnot, they still are amazingly connected to one another. And I get really, really upset when the media constantly portrays things like the pedophilia that goes on, yet they never seem to mention that, you know, like up in the Northern Territory, the pedophilia rings are run by white taxi drivers. It's not the Aboriginals themselves. And, you know, this constant kind of demonizing of a culture when that's not what they're about.
Well, go ahead.
No, just saying in any way, shape, or form, this really isn't what they're about. And all the drug addiction and all these other things that are afflicting their lives are symptoms of white, you know, imperialistic, you know, taking over the country.
Well, I love that. I
found a...
Go ahead, Peter.
I was just going to say I found a reference, and the reference is that 50% of the world's languages have been lost in the last 6 years.
Six?
Six.
And that's half of the languages that were still existing 6 years ago. So you probably can take that same formulae and go back further and just think of the thousands of languages that have been lost over the decades.
You know, this shows me how what you're talking about, John, what you're talking about, Peter, it shows me how vacuous we've become. You know, diamonds and pearls. You know, you mentioned that, Peter. Now, we have real problems in this country. We have real problems in the world. There was a climate debate hosted, I think I mentioned it during the show, hosted by Grist Magazine and Living on Earth, the radio show from American Public Media. It was hosted in Los Angeles this past Saturday. Hillary Clinton showed up, John Edwards showed up, and Dennis Kucinich showed up. Not a single Republican, and none of the other Democrats. That tells you something. Meanwhile, I checked my email the other day, and I forward these along to you every now and then, Peter, because I know you'll get a giggle out of them. Do you remember, John, were you out of the country during the Clinton administration, too?
I was there for the first, like, half of it, or two-thirds of it, and then I was in Germany.
Well,
towards the end.
It's hard to forget how the right-wingers ran around for 8 long years screaming about how Bill and Hillary Clinton are going to come get our guns. They're going to get our guns. They're taking away our rights.
Yeah.
To the point that I think I've mentioned on a number of occasions, Charlton Heston came to Beckley, West Virginia, and literally told an assembled crowd of right-wing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful that Al Gore was going to take away their guns. He did that in 2000. Now, meanwhile, all these right-wingers who were so concerned with their individual rights have completely shut up while the civil liberties crackdown has taken place under the Bush administration. But you know what I get from them? And this is what I send along to Peter every now and then. Just the other day, I got a note from the American Family Association.
Mm.
And they were beside themselves, John, because they said Christmas had been removed from PetSmart.
Yes, I loved it. In fact, I just had to use it. I don't know if you use it on your show, too, or not, but I just used it anyway on mine because it was too good.
And so today they're crowing that Christmas has come back to PetSmart. That's right. I guess little Fido can have a chew toy that looks like Jesus or a Christmas tree.
Doggy communion set.
Yeah, I mean, was Doggy all broken up? I mean, ours wasn't, Peter.
No, she'd rather have a hot dog than a cracker any day.
You know, we're screwed. We're just screwed. And you know what I had in mind. You know, ordinarily this was the slot that was occupied by Joe Vecchio when he was having at it, but it didn't work out for him because of his. He has to get up very early in the morning to go to work. So he's going to come back and do a weekend show. But I wanted to, you know, I just figured for tonight until I figure out what we will do in these 45 minutes. I figured the reason I was waiting for the horn section to come along in Dixie Chicken there is I figured that's what we'd call this. At least, you know, if we ever do it again, we'd call it the horn section.
There you go.
Great idea.
I like it.
Brilliant.
And so, you know, just whatever, you know, whatever's on the plate, whatever's laying around, whatever we haven't quite gotten to in any one of our individual shows, if there was something laying around left over, whatever. Because I found it so very interesting, the war on Christmas, war on Christmas, war on Christmas. I want to share something with you guys. And I think this is just going to blow you away. You know, we hear so much about the war on Christmas. And it's
36 days left in that war, by the way. We need to get on it.
Yeah, we're behind. We're screwing up big time. I haven't even mugged a Santa yet.
I haven't killed a tree yet.
Yeah.
Don't go abusing those guys, man. They only get work for like 6 weeks out of the year. It's not their fault.
Yeah, and they got to make enough money in those six weeks to you know cover the screw top wine for the rest of the year while they move under the bridge.
Where you're going? I just knew.
Well, you know, great minds. But I've said so many times that the right wing has never, and Republicans in general, have never had an original idea in their lives. Right? So,
right.
All along I'm thinking, where's the war on Christmas? There's got to be more to it than this. And lo and behold, the evidence pops up today over at a website called Talk to Action, and these are some great quotes, and I just want to run them by you real quick. It has become pretty general. Last Christmas, most people had a hard time finding Christmas cards that indicated in any way that Christmas commemorated someone's birth. Okay? Okay, so we got that. The writer followed it up by saying, and this could be John Gibson, couldn't it? This could be Bill O'Reilly. Easter, they will have the same difficulty in finding Easter cards that contain any suggestion that Easter commemorates a certain event. There will be rabbits and eggs and spring flowers, but a hint of the resurrection will be hard to find. Now, all this begins with the designers of the cards, and even in this business, one comes upon that same policy of declaring anti-Semitic everything that is Christian. If Rabbi Coffee says that the New Testament is the most anti-Semitic book ever written, what must be the judgment on an Easter card that is truly an Easter card? You're going to love this. This comes from an article called The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem, by Henry Ford.
Oh!
Lord.
Oh,
they have never had an original idea in their miserable, misbegotten lives. So, you know, next time you hear War on Christmas, just know where it came from. I mean, does that just blow you away, Peter?
Well, I rather resent being displaced as the most, I thought I was... You know, I really hate it that the Jews are regaining their popularity as being evil. I just rather like the title. I want it.
Yeah, you were wearing it with pride. You know.
Yeah. It's working for me.
If you could just get over that whole follower of Christ thing and be an atheist, you could be the single most loathed individual on planet Earth.
Yeah. Bob, that's so perfect. I love it. Oh, that's perfect.
I definitely fall into that. I probably fall into that category. You know, almost
the atheist?
The most
John.
Hated.
I never knew.
not minus the gay part, but you know, though I'm extremely homosexual tolerant. You know, some of my best friends are homosexuals, and I've never had a problem with it.
Yeah, you're on the radio with one. Yeah, so yeah.
Yeah, and I've been hit on by many, and it's never really bothered me much. And,
I think I tried once.
He's still thinking that one over.
But I go around with my I'm a big fan of StumbleUpon, you know, a little addition that you can get to your browser. And one of my categories that I have selected as things I like to stumble through are sites on atheism and agnosticism. And one of the things that's been coming around a lot lately has been reminding people of that great quote from George Bush the First, who said, "Atheists should not be considered U.S. citizens."
Oh, that's just... Well, there was a politician at one point who said the most idiotic Christian was more fit for office than the most intelligent atheist.
Well, they certainly got the most idiotic one in office.
And you know, there was this great study that came out a year or two ago. I think it came out of Oxford, where they did a massive kind of study over a few years and followed people's lifestyles and their morality and their actions. And it was shown that atheists and agnostics live the most moral lives in action.
Oh, without a doubt.
And because of the simple fact that, you know, and this is not taking away from people whose faith I have respect for, like Peter's, you know, the atheists and agnostics believe, you know, we're not going somewhere else after. This is the only shot we got.
Yep, no dress rehearsal.
And... yeah, and so all of my actions, you know, it falls into that whole karma thing, you know, and the golden rule idea, do unto others, you know, be good to your neighbor. And so I have to live my life that way. It's part of the reason, you know, it fits in with my environmental activism, because I cannot, I've gotten to the point now where I can't be wasteful, because I know that regardless of whether it's going to affect me today or tomorrow, It's going to affect everyone else that comes after me. So this is the only chance I got. There, for me, there's no guy with a scorecard or a laptop sitting there, you know, making a list of the bad stuff I've done, because he's going to whack me in the afterlife. I only have the here and now, and that's it.
I find following the flying spaghetti monster so easy to do. You know, an afterlife that includes strippers and beer. A very simple theology that says first he made a mountain, then a tree, then a dwarf. I can go along with all of that. But, you know, to give you an idea, John, just because, you know, you're there, and it may seem as far from here as there does from, you know what I mean. And, Peter, I don't know if you saw this or not, but down in Texas, in the Austin area, and, of course, Austin is a, well, you know, John, I mean, you've been a Texan.
Yeah.
Austin is a little liberal haven in a sea of bigotry and intolerance.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. Well, bigotry has found its way to Austin. For 23 years, the Austin Area Interreligious Ministries have hosted a Thanksgiving dinner in the week prior to Thanksgiving. It would have gone down Sunday. This year it was to be hosted by the Hyde Park Baptist Church. Why is it always Baptist, Peter?
Well, because they're ubiquitous and they have the biggest churches and they're convenient everywhere, and there's usually a shopping mall across the street.
And they're and they're always without fail the most bigoted.
Yeah.
So this interfaith Thanksgiving dinner was going to play host to Baptists, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Methodists, Christian Church, Catholics, Greek Orthodox, what have you, Baha'i, Hindu, Jews, and Muslims.
This is beginning to worry me. I just can't see how the Baptists could wrap their head. This I got to hear.
Well, the minute that they found out there were going to be Muslims on their Baptist property, they declared that the service would not be held.
Huh? Uh-huh.
So let's see if we can get this straight. If you're a Baptist in Texas and you're a veteran and you're gay and you drop dead, you can't have a funeral service in the Baptist church. Mm-hmm. And if you're Muslim, you can't even set foot on Baptist property.
It's about the size of it. I believe that church paid for the catering for that poor man who died in the war, but they refused to let the funeral take place.
Well,
they compromised.
Yeah. Well, you know, Baptists are fond of having dinner on the ground, and they took it literally this time.
Yeah,
here's your stinking
exactly.
Food.
The old casserole trick.
I don't know if you guys are watching the chat room, but ELO just makes a comment. You know, Bob, did you hear about the convention over the weekend? Some church folks gathered to discuss the flying spaghetti monster. And this is where I... like, you know, these atheism sites that I get sent to, and actually there's so many of them, I actually start getting a bit tired of them because it's a bit repetitive. But I love on some of the threads where someone will, you know, use the flying spaghetti monster idea to talk about all religion and the fallacies around them. And then to have some really, really wild, you know, religious nutters from all styles come in and comment on the thread and start actually talking as though the flying spaghetti monster is thought of as a religion.
Well, see, that's the beautiful thing. The flying spaghetti monster is real to them. Demons are real to them. Angels dancing on pinheads are real to them. Preachers who are pinheads are real to them.
Oh, and then they refer to the religion of atheism. And it's just like, you are so not getting it. I mean, you are so not getting it. You know, I kind of...
Go ahead.
The Christians, the fundamentalist religion people who want to refer to atheism as a religion and as though we're trying to compete with the other religions, and that's not, that's like so not it, because atheism is no religion. It has nothing to do with any religion. It is not a religion in itself. It is a belief that there is no supreme being.
Yeah, and see,
at all.
Peter, you were going to say something?
Well, what I was going to say, it's a brief story. Saturday was the church bazaar, the Mississippi Methodist Church bazaar, and it's bizarre in more spellings than one.
I was going to ask.
Nonetheless, I was supposed to run the soundboard for in fact, 4 hours worth of gospel groups that came in. One of the groups had their own equipment, and they didn't need me to run the soundboard. So I went and sat down next to the lady in our church that plays the piano. Now, this lady that plays the piano just happens to be married to the man who got up and said, "But I still think Bush is a man of God." You recall my story on that on another show. Okay. All right. Well, we're sitting here listening to music. She pulls out, and you know how I like to rant about paperback religion and how it has no depth and blah, blah. Okay. She pulls this out and thumbs over to a chapter and shows me this paragraph. She's talking about division in the church. You know, every church, every organization, there are always people who are arguing difference of opinion. Okay.
Long division?
This particular one is like, it goes into the fact that it's the women that are causing this because the women are not submitting to their husbands, and the fact that they're not submitting to their husbands make them witches, and it is a form of witchcraft, this division that you have in the churches.
Oh, glory.
And it all comes down to the women being not subservient. And I said, well, don't you think that maybe it's just that some people are just jackasses, you know, as opposed to you. And, oh, no, it has to do with the... Anyway, I just echoing John's thought. I don't really know how to explain it.
Yeah, that's that verse from 30-second flip-floppians or something, isn't it?
Yeah, about not getting it, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just exposed to it Saturday. I mean, you know, my teeth all, you know, clenched together, and I ran from the room screaming.
Yeah, you're down several layers of enamel at this point and have to go to the dentist now, mm-hmm. just from grinding them.
And... You know, and
well, were the bands any good, Peter?
Oh yes, they were excellent. The beginning band was called the Angel Band, and they had mandolin, they had guitar, they had banjo. It was really quite fabulous. They were very good. The others mostly all sang the CD. Some of those were very good, and some of them weren't. You know, but the full band was actually quite good.
Well, then it was worthwhile.
I mean, I gotta tell you, Peter, I, for one, and it's really funny, I fall into this musician's kind of weird catch-22 that although I have my opinions about all organized religion, I do have respect for people of true faith, and that is not blind faith. Like, you have never... You know, struck me as someone who just follows blindly. Obviously, you couldn't be doing the show that you do. You couldn't live your life as honestly as you do if you did kind of follow this so blindly. But just like many musicians, I love gospel choirs. I love gospel music. And I think that is, for me... where it's not about the faith or religion or the doctrine, it's the fact that you have a group of people who have put their spirits together to create a sound, and it's that spirit that comes across that is so unbelievable. My friend Anthony Lowenstein, the author, you know, who's called the self-hating Jew and all that, when he was in Syria, and he was up at Mount Sinai, and he said one of the most amazing things that he experienced was, you know, he gets to the top and he's up at the temple, and there was this German gospel choir that had made a pilgrimage up there, and they were, you know, singing hymns on top of the mountain, and he said he just sat there kind of speechless and silent and lost in it, and he himself, as an agnostic Jew, felt himself, you know, a little bit of mixed feelings about it, and I used the same, you know, explanation to him. I said, it's about the spirit of humanity that you were witnessing right there. It didn't have
Good
anything
point.
To do with whose faith it was. It was the spirit of humanity, and that's where, you know, people who have, you know, faith in whoever or whatever it is, if that drives them to a better life, if that gives them guidance, I think it's a good thing. But I, for one, do not like it being shoved down my throat, no matter who it is. And I will get militant with some people. And this is where sometimes we in this you know corner of the pie get labeled nastily. But there's this thing about, you know, like I love Carl Sagan, you know, the science of discovery and the wonder about this universe in which we live in. And I find that many people's, you know, dogmatic religion ends up painting themselves into such a small place that I think that it closes them off to all the incredible wonders of this place in which we live on this teeny little speck.
Couldn't agree with you more, John.
That's what that's what makes that story that Peter had during his show this evening so unutterably it's disgusting. To have a former NFL player declare that the Bible is his playbook.
Yes, Dallas Cowboys playbook. That's what he said. Quote.
And to have him say that he's going to take over Microsoft. No, the best part of that, Peter, I think I typed it to you in production, is that if all the little fundies buy Microsoft stock enough to control Microsoft, and then they go in and they get rid of all the gay programmers and code writers and designers, Microsoft will crash like a paralyzed falcon, and then all the fundies will go broke. I mean, I halfway like the idea.
Well, of course, then it begins to affect little Billy, who, you know, I'm his minion, so, you know, I get it, though, and I agree. They deserve it.
Well, they don't think. They do not think. I mean, you know, dumber than a handful of hammers.
Yeah.
And the hate that goes along with it. I don't know if you caught it or not, but one of those dudes that wears a lace dress has come out and said that if you vote for Democrats, if you're Roman Catholic and you vote for Democrats and you don't pay attention to the church's teaching on homosexuals and abortion and whether or not you wear a little latex thingy to, then, you know, you're going to hell and you can't have a cracker.
Yep, they've amplified it this year. Then not only are they giving you the advice, they're amplifying it by telling you the punishment. You're going to go to hell.
Well, but the funniest part out of this, you know, just like the fundies who buy the stock and then go broke, the American Conference of Bishops couldn't mail this out to every church this year. They had to do it by email and hang it up on a website because they didn't have the money for the postage, because they paid out all that money in settlements to people who've been diddled by, you know, priests.
There you go.
And they still, you know, hello, you know, bright flashing lights, you don't get it. You know, I much preferred your archbishop on your program, Peter.
Oh, yes, I have another one coming up, Bishop Spong coming up.
Oh, that's gonna, yeah, that's gonna, y'all. You've gone rock and roll with Bishop Spong. I mean, he's a celebrity.
I've heard that name,
Shelby Spong.
Well, apparently, a lot of people have. There were several people in the chat room that I didn't know would recognize. But Bishop Spong, he'll be on Monday, and he's the author of Why Christianity Must Change or Die.
And he's the liberal Christianity. He's liberal Christianity's answer to Elvis. I mean, he's that big.
Wait a minute. I think he was down here in Australia not long ago. And is he part of this new multi-faith church movement where you have folks actually studying, you know, Hinduism, Islam, Christianity, Judaism?
Oh, yeah. He's,
all of it.
He's way ecumenical.
Yeah, and I've got to do a lot of reading because he's a prolific writer, and I have got to do lots of cramming before he comes in the show.
You have much homework.
Yes, I do.
Well, guys, we're kind of up on top of it. You know, this has been a blast, and I hope we can do it. And you know, I'd love to invite Dr. Bill or Guy or Mark to join in this thing, and because I think we could have a blast in this little hour once in a while.
I agree. You know, all of us have our, and you know, speaking with each other really gives the listeners a real good perspective of the way we feel about each other and the spirit of the network and the whole thing.
Well, this is just a joy. I mean, we had a lot of fun. I guess it was election night of 2006 when there were, you know, four or five of us bouncing in and out, and it was just too much fun. And I love the concept of us getting together and talking about the issues that are on our minds, because most of the time, you know, Peter, you used to call my show, John, blah, back and forth, yada, yada, yada. But once you get your own show and you get focused on it, you stop that interaction. And some of the most precious moments this network has ever had has been interaction among the people who are the hosts.
Good point.
So, you know, I know you're old and evil and have to get your beauty sleep and stuff, Peter. But if
I'm sure the mud mask will help. I'll just do the mud mask.
Yeah, Sea of Galilee, absolutely. Brought to you by Calovita. You know, that's one of the ads that we have to craft. But, you know, we've got this hour gap, and, you know, I think bringing in Rick Goodner, a horn psychologist, during this hour once in a while would be a lot of fun. Matt Sowards, Billy Shears, if Billy could get over his terminal shyness. I think we can have a lot of fun in this hour without having to play a rerun, because it seemed to me to be a profound disservice to John to hang a rerun in between the end of your show and the beginning of his.
I completely agree. That is not good. That is not good. And I agree about Billy Shears too. Billy Shears is an incredible wealth of information, and somehow we have to drag him kicking and screaming into the live. We're just going to do it, Billy. We're just going to get you. Just get over it.
Yeah, you have no choice. You will be assimilated.
Yes.
Resistance is futile.
Welcome to the Horn Borg.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Hey, every band needs a horn section, and this is it.
Yeah. Doom.
All right, so coming up, John, all foxed up there for the coming hour. Peter, thank you for staying up late with us.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a blast.
Man, I don't know. I guess I'll be filling this hour for the foreseeable future, because, you know, I'm bored. I don't have anything else to do. I'll do 4 hours of radio. Hell, I'll do six. Because I am the filibuster.
This is true.
I am Boba the Hutt.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
So, Peter.
All right, well, I'm going to get a drink, and I'll see you guys on the other side when I come on for my thing. But thanks, Peter. Thanks, Bob. This has been a blast.
It's been a lot of fun. Peter, thank you very much.
Y'all
take care.
Good night, John.
And let's see. How about some music? Just to end stuff with. I'm in a little feet kind of mode. So, here we go.
This is the Quality News Network. Northern Iraq's top U.S. commander says despite a current drop in violence across the country as a whole, al-Qaeda has shifted their focus to several key cities in the now more violent north. Army Major General Mark Hertling says militants have pushed north and east and have grown increasingly proficient in carrying out roadside bomb attacks. A series of sectarian weekend bombings killed 17 Iraqis, wounding 48. One attack in Baghdad targeted a newspaper editor and finance ministry official. In addition, a suicide attack in Bakuba in the volatile Diyala province killed 3 U.S. soldiers and 4 Iraqi children yesterday as the troops handed out holiday gifts to a crowd of Iraqi youngsters. A federal grand jury subpoenaed several security guards with Blackwater USA as part of a newly opened investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqi citizens in September. That's according to ABC News. The Justice Department has declined to comment, and a Blackwater spokeswoman said she could not confirm any probe. The current death toll in Bangladesh could go much higher in the aftermath of the country's deadliest cyclone in more than a decade. More than 3,500 people are dead. Thousands more are missing. Teams from international aid organizations are coordinating with military troops to deliver food, water, and clothing to villagers whose homes are now flattened rubble. The White House chief advisor on Homeland Security and Terrorism has resigned. Fran Townsend serving in the position for more than 4 years. Martial law continues across Pakistan as President General Pervez Musharraf rejects Western demands to restore democratic rule before national elections early next year. In Cambodia, the former Khmer Rouge head of state arrested to stand trial for genocide, the fifth high official of Pol Pot to be charged. More than 2 million people died during the killing fields regime. Former Republican Governor Jim Gilmore will seek the U.S. Senate seat